Welcome to this podcast of sermons from University Christian Church, Disciples of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. UCC is a community of faith where all are welcome, where we worship in a spirit of togetherness, where we embrace curiosity, community, and compassion. We don't claim to have all the answers, nor do we expect you to check your brain at the door, but rather we gather together to find the courage to engage the scriptures and to ask the big questions about who we are as people of faith, and who God is calling us to be. At UCC, we seek the sacred, commit to love, and empower to serve. And in so doing, we work together to transform the world through Christ's courageous love. My name is Reverend Dr. Russ Peterman, and I'm the senior minister here at UCC. And so most of these sermons are from me. So we are wrapping up the holy and sacred season of Lent. For the last several weeks, we've been preparing, we've been anticipating resurrection, and this week we enter into the holiest week of the entire Christian year. We call it Holy Week. Now, it's traditionally believed that Jesus' public ministry, from the time that he was baptized until he was crucified, that lasted about 3 years. Some say that it's amazing that he lasted that long, as many buttons as he pushed and people that he angered. While the gospel writers attempt to summarize this entire period for us, it's clear that what they believed was most important was this last week, these last 7 days. We call this Holy Week, and if we look closely at the scriptures, 30% of Matthew's gospel is comprised of these last 7 days. In Mark, it's 40%. In Luke, it's 20%, although if you include his preparation going towards Jerusalem, 62% of the gospel is designated to this Holy Week. John, 47% of his gospel is of Holy Week. So clearly the events of this last week are what is most important. And as we enter into this time of Holy Week, we as a congregation will be inviting you and preparing you, offering resources for you to celebrate Holy Week at home. And so I encourage you to watch your email, to pay attention to the website, as there will be some resources that will be coming your way. And we encourage you to participate in this holiest of week. One of the stories that we'll encounter this week is the one that we'll be looking at today. It took place on Thursday after Jesus and his disciples had celebrated the Passover meal. The Passover meal, as we know, is a celebration of Israel's defining story of how God delivered the Israelites out of slavery. It was also at the end of this meal that Jesus instituted a new covenant, a new meal, one that we will celebrate in just a few moments as we gather around the table and celebrate in what we now call communion. When they were done with that holy and sacred moment, Jesus went with his disciples to a garden called Gethsemane, and he began to pray in that moment. Now, the Gospels are filled with times when Jesus was regularly withdrawing from the crowds, and he would spend hours, sometimes all night, simply praying. But none of those stories ever tell us how he prayed. And so in this story that we're about to hear this morning, this passage gives us some clues on how Jesus prayed. I want to invite you to turn with me to Matthew chapter 26. We'll be reading together verses 36 through 46. Listen now to the holy and sacred word of God. And then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and agitated. And then he said to them, "I am deeply grieved, even to death. Remain here and stay awake with me." And then going a little farther, he threw himself onto the ground and he prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me, but yet not what I want, but what you want." And then he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, "So you couldn't stay awake with me for even 1 hour. Stay awake and pray. Pray that you will not come into the time of trial. For the spirit is indeed willing, but the flesh is weak." And again, he went away for a second time and he prayed, "My Father, if this cannot pass unless I drink it, your will be done." And again, he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. And so leaving them again, he went away and he prayed for the third time, saying these same words. And then he came to the disciples and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and taking your rest? See, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up. Let's be going, because see, my betrayer is at hand." These are the words of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Our theme during this season of Lent, this time of preparation, this time of anticipation, has been to listen. To turn away from all of the busyness of our lives, to try and strip away some of the distractions, to focus our attention on listening in a deeper way. Now, the hope, the plan was for us to listen for that still small voice, that God, the voice that comes to us, as we've said, oftentimes less like a shout and more often like a whisper. Sometimes even in the sound of sheer silence. Now, the expectation was that when we were able to go inward, that we would hear that still small voice of God, but we would also find our own voice, that voice of wisdom as well. Little did we know, though, when we began this journey 5 weeks ago, where we'd find ourselves today. We find ourselves living in the midst of a pandemic, in the midst of a stay-at-home order. We are confined to our homes. To say that the world has changed in the last 5 weeks is a huge understatement. But yet, here we are. And if we're honest with each other, we will admit that it's been a scary few weeks. And I have found it tougher than I thought that it was going to be. I found myself having spikes of anxiety, moments of deep sadness, times of just anxiousness. When I think about my family, my friends, my church, and I worry that people I love, that you might become sick. It feels all so out of control, so beyond comprehension. And sometimes, if I'm honest, it becomes overwhelming. And I suspect I'm not alone in that. And if you're feeling that way, that's okay too. As I said a couple of weeks ago, it's normal, it's natural to feel this way, to feel sad, to feel anxious, to feel afraid in times of crisis like this. And the best thing that we can do, the best thing that we can do is just try to breathe through it, to be present in our emotions, to feel what we need to feel. But then the key is to not get stuck there, to try and put ourselves in a more positive place, to remind ourselves that we aren't in this alone, to ask what we can do in that moment to help other people, to reach out, to connect, to touch, to pick up the phone and call or text, especially someone that we think might be struggling too. And just to let them know, remind them in the same way that I'm reminding you that we are not alone in this, that we're all in this together. I have to admit that it has been hard as well for me in the midst of all this to practice what I've been preaching these last 5 weeks. It's been hard for me to listen, to still myself, to carve out time, to clear out space for that still small voice. It's been hard. And maybe you found that too. I came across an article, though, this week that was helpful for me. It was written by another minister. This minister serves a church in Baltimore, but before that, she served a church in New York City, and she served that church in the midst of Hurricane Sandy. And she was reflecting this week on some of the things that she learned in the midst of that crisis that she is finding to be helpful in the midst of this one. She said in this article, it was scary and hard in that time. And while a hurricane is very different than what we're facing now, working in the time of COVID-19 seems really familiar. She went on to say, she said, my brain is running too fast and I can't catch my breath. And every so often I become overwhelmed. And I think about those people that are the most vulnerable. And right now it's like a big wave crashing over us. Or at least it's about to. But this big wave is one that we can't see. But we know that it's coming. And that sounds about right, doesn't it? One of the things that she mentions in that article, and I found it incredibly helpful, is that in times like this, stress and anxiety, that your brain, it doesn't work as well as it usually does. Now, I needed to hear that because I can't tell you how many times in the last few days that I have forgotten what I'm doing right in the middle of doing it. There's something about stress. There's something about anxiety that messes with our sequencing, with our ability to order our thoughts, to focus ourselves. We get easily distracted and lose track of what we're doing. I have been experiencing what the Buddha calls the monkey mind, which is this stream of consciousness that is pretty much the exact opposite of the clear, calm, contemplative mindfulness that a person who is listening for the still, small voice is supposed to have. Perhaps it would help for us to remember that if you ever get discouraged in times like this, over how hard it is to hear God's voice in the midst of all that is going on, to bear in mind that, as we just heard in the story before us a minute ago, that even Jesus had to work at it too. Maybe that's why he was constantly withdrawing from the crowds that were pressing in on him, that he was always trying to find a place that he could get away. He was looking for quiet, because maybe it was hard for him too. And rather than beat ourselves up, maybe we should remember that even Jesus had to deal with those competing voices in his head. There's a neuroscientist at Baylor University by the name of David Eagleman, and he refers to all of those voices, those internal chatter, those neuro noises as a team of rivals, voices that constantly vie for our attention, that even Jesus had to listen to sort through all of that internal chatter until he could hear that still small voice in the very heart of his heart itself. That night in the garden when Jesus was all alone, when he was facing a time of great uncertainty, of fear and anxiety, we get to listen in. We get to hear his prayers. And I don't know if you noticed, but those prayers that he prayed, they were honest. They were gut-wrenching. And finally, it was a letting go of expectations about life and turning towards an acceptance that gives us the courage to move forward in moments like that. My friend Lois is a minister in California. And the last time I spoke with her, she told me that a member of her church had recently died. And when she was describing him, she told me that he was so authentic in his prayers. And because of his authenticity, it enabled the rest of the congregation to be more authentic in their prayers as well. She said, we'll miss him a lot for that. And our community is poorer because of his loss. I think Jesus prayed the same way. His prayers were authentic. They were honest. Thomas More tells about the time when he was 19 years old and living in a monastery. And he was trying to study prayer. He was trying to get really good at prayer. But the problem was that he kept getting stuck. And he finally went to a priest for advice, and he explained to this priest, he said, I read a book on prayer, and it said that the best way to pray is just have a conversation with God. He said, I keep trying that, but it seems like I'm the only one doing all the talking. I wonder if that sounds familiar to anyone else besides me. But the priest says, just keep listening. Just keep listening until you hear something. And now Moore, who is our generation's one of the most important voices and authorities on prayer, he says it took him nearly 30 years to discover how to truly listen, to stop talking long enough that he could learn how to wait and to really listen. I've shared with some of you that one of my favorite books is a book called Too Soon Old, Too Late Smart. It's written by a psychiatrist by the name of Gordon Livingston. And Livingston lost not one, but two of his children. And he wrote this book of important life lessons, the difficult things that life teaches us, things that we need to know sooner rather than later, things that everyone needs to know, things that his children would never get a chance to learn. And with all of the things happening around us these days that feel a little precarious, I went back this week and thumbed through that book. In one of the lessons, and I have to be honest with you that I had forgotten that this was in there. One of the lessons was that only bad things happen quickly. Only bad things happen quickly. And I think many of us know that to be true. There was a woman in my last congregation. Her name was Anne, and she was going blind. And every day she would pray that she would be able to see. But every day her eyesight got a little bit worse. But she came to see that God was leading her in a new direction. And she said to me one day, she said, you know, I used to complain, but there was just silence. She explained to me that eventually God finally came to her in a way that she wasn't expecting. I was asking for eyesight, and I complained about the injustice and the unfairness of the whole thing. But what I needed though, was to be released from my fears. And eventually that's what I got when I wasn't even looking. God came to me finally over my complaints. God came and released me from my fears. Anne is now legally blind. But a few years ago, she went back to school and got her master's degree. And she now counsels people as they cope with their own degenerative diseases. You see, church, it's when we start to listen that our prayers truly begin in earnest. It's when we run out of words, when we scrape the bottom of the verbal barrel, when all that we have left are those inarticulate longings of the heart, when our hungers are beyond our expressions. It's in that moment that the Spirit really begins its work. Bearing those pieces of our souls to God in a way that makes the divine sense and returns to us with good news. With the good news that may be even beyond our wildest imaginations. You see, it's when we come to discover that our words are not enough, that we don't know how we should or ought to pray. And it's in that moment that, as the Apostle Paul says, that the Spirit intercedes with sighs too deep for human words. See, it's when we come to discover that our words are not enough, that we don't know how to pray, that it's in that moment. It's in that moment that Paul tells us that the Spirit intercedes for us with sighs too deep for human words. And in so doing, we discover that we aren't alone. And in that discovery, we come to know grace and healing and protection and presence. which are the things that we would have asked for in the first place if we had truly known what we wanted. Church, the week ahead will be filled with more uncertainty, with more fear, with more anxiety, and with more death. But all Jesus asks of us is to stay awake, to be present in this moment, and to know, to trust beyond a shadow of a doubt that we are never alone, that the one who goes with us has been here before and knows that this is not the end of the story, that at the other end is an empty tomb and new life. Thanks be to God. Amen. So thanks for listening. I do hope and pray that you found this sermon to be engaging and thoughtful and inspiring and maybe even a little challenging. I also hope that if you get the chance to join us on Sunday mornings in our sanctuary, you will. I think you'll find the welcome warm and inviting, the music inspiring, and there will always be a place at the table for you, regardless of who you are or where you come from or where you are on your spiritual journey. Just know that you're welcome here. And if you'd like to support the production of this podcast and the ongoing mission and ministry of UCC, or to simply find out more about this community of faith, we invite you to go to universitychristian.org. Grace and peace to you.